You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. This winter, home heating costs in the Midwest are projected to be 21% less than last winter, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. But even with that drop, Wisconsinites can expect one of the most expensive winters on record. Our next guest is a household utility expert with information on how the energy market could impact our heating bills and what resources are available for people who want to save money or need help meeting their energy bills. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Is your heating bill manageable during the winter? What steps do you take to be energy efficient? Do you have any secret energy saving hacks you want to share with everybody? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tom Content is Executive Director for the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin, the state's consumer advocate for residential and small business utility customers. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, Rob, great to be back. Great to be with you.
So give us some more perspective. Sounds like good news down from last winter, but last winter was kind of bad.
Yeah, last winter was bad. We had a whole bunch of things socking us all at once last year, and it wasn't just the weather. It was natural gas prices actually tripled last year, and that's what that the war in Ukraine, a whole bunch of other factors, including U.S. exports increasing of natural gas, was kind of making for tight supply, and that really drove up the prices and actually really led to a pretty expensive winter season. This winter, maybe not quite as bad. But still, the analysis we published recently from the National Energy Assistance Directors Association showed that it still could be the second highest and second most expensive winter of the last 10 years.
And is what's driving it? Is that natural gas prices aren't as astronomically high, but still pretty high?
Still a carryover effect, I think, from those higher prices. You know, natural gas prices have come down markedly, even though the war in Ukraine is still going on. And there is a natural gas, the whole Nord Stream pipeline issue was one of the factors, issues that cropped up during that conflict. That's one of the factors. And then even for homeowners who use other forms of heat, this still could be one of the highest because most of Wisconsin, most across the state, most Wisconsin residents do use natural gas for heat. But especially in the rural areas, people tend to use propane. And some folks actually still use heating oil or electricity. And for propane prices, because crude oil, those are dependent on crude oil prices. So those heating costs are also supposed to be high and actually more expensive than even much more expensive than natural gas itself.
How much of this is a straight line between, you know, this is what fuel costs, so this is what we pay, versus a utility rate increases that might or might not vary based on the costs of production?
Yeah, well, that's a really good point. On the heating, so there really it's two. You get, even though you have one, a lot of people get one utility bill from one utility. There's the heating side, there's the natural gas side and the electric side. And so the natural gas side, that's driven primarily by that price of the natural gas and also how cold the winter is. That's a real, if we have a warmer than expected winter, and fingers crossed, the national outlook for the upper Midwest is calling for a warmer than normal winter, then that could actually ease up on that side. But on the electric side of the bill, and this is where CUB does most of its work, we're really looking at a whopper of an increase for most utility customers across the state. In fact, the utilities are right now in for about $500 million worth of increases. And so we're hopeful that the Public Service Commission will follow CUB's recommendations and really rein those price increases in when they start making those decisions actually starting tomorrow morning in Madison.
Yeah, the utilities making the case that, hey, they're investing in clean energy for the future. They have other costs. They're dealing with inflation like everybody else. Why shouldn't they be able to get these rate increases?
You know, it's true that the solar power, the transition to clean energy over time is projected to actually produce savings because the price of solar energy has really dropped dramatically over the last 5 and 10 years. But what the challenge is that we're building so much and it's hitting our bills right at the same time when we're still reliant a lot on coal-fired power and natural gas-fired power. So as well as nuclear. So there are so many things hitting all at once. And that's where Cub's point in these cases is really to for the customers to think about the average customer and think about those who are really struggling to make ends meet. And we're highlighting the issue of utility profits because the profits of Wisconsin and actually utilities across the country have been allowed to remain far too high for a long time. And it's time to right that wrong. And if the Public Service Commission agrees with Cub in these decisions over the next few weeks, Wisconsinites could see savings of over $125 million over the next couple of years.
Talking to Tom Content with the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin, looking at our winter heating and energy bills. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We're going to get into some advice for saving money on those bills and look at help that might be out there for people who have trouble paying. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tom, for that person who's maybe having a tough time making ends meet and that heating bill in particular is getting out of hand, what kind of help, what kind of options are available to them here in Wisconsin?
So the first thing we recommend, and this is really important, two main things. One is make sure you're on everybody who's concerned about the fluctuations in their energy bills from winter to summer should get on a budget billing program, which evens out those bills over the 12 months. So you're not socked with a giant bill 1 month and then very small bills in the spring or the fall. The other thing for folks who really are having a tough time, they should reach out to their utility if they're behind on their bills to make sure they get on a payment plan. And then also there's a lot of considerable amount of federal money that's available in terms of energy, federal and state energy assistance. And energybenefit.wi.gov is a good link for people to go to because that's a one-stop place where you can apply for energy assistance. And what we've found over time is that more people are eligible for energy assistance than actually sign up and get it.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Larry is with us in Janesville. Larry, hi.
Hi. I heat with wood pellets. I buy my wood pellets ahead in the season. I just wonder if there was any help with purchasing those.
Larry, are you in a position where that's, it's a hardship to stock up on those wood pellets?
Well, it's $1,500 now for the season.
Sure. Larry, thanks for the call. Tom, for the federal heating assistance you mentioned, is it agnostic as far as how we heat, whether it's electric, natural gas, or like Larry, wood pellets?
I believe you're eligible to apply if you are income eligible. But I don't know the specifics on wood on the self-generated heat versus utility or propane heat. But I think assistance programs are still available. And the other thing to take advantage of your older homes. Not sure exactly how new Larry's home is, but there are weatherization funds available for people who are struggling to make ends meet. But I don't know specific rebates or discounts on the pellets.
Larry, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Tom Content, Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin, about what we can expect from our utility bills this winter. Coming up, we'll get advice on saving some energy, keeping that heat inside the house. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have trouble paying for your utilities? Do you want some advice or have some advice to share on a weatherizing for the winter? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our conversation with Tom Content, Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin, the state's consumer advocate for residential and small business utility customers, talking about what our heating bills might look like this winter and how we can save money on those bills. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about utilities and heating costs for the upcoming winter? Have you ever taken advantage of energy bill assistance or rebates for efficiency improvements in your house? Do you look for those focus on energy appliances? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tom, let's start getting into conservation, saving energy, and thereby saving money. What is some of the low-hanging fruit that people might start looking for around their houses or apartments?
Yeah, so the first thing we always talk about is if you may be eligible for a time-of-use rate, which is kind of a nights and weekends that the price is cheaper. So if you can shift your energy-intensive behaviors just a bit, whether you're washing dishes.
I think we lost Tom there. We'll see if we can get him back. There we go. Tom, you're back. Go ahead.
Am I back?
You
can
are.
You hear me now?
I hear you, Tom. Go for it.
All right. So the first thing we talk about is getting on a nights and weekends rate with your local utility. It's called time of use. And that gives you discounts at nighttime to if you are able to shift your most energy intensive activities around the house, like washing your dishes or laundry, to the evening hours or early morning hours, and especially for those with electric vehicles, for charging those at home, you can see considerable savings. And another big low-cost thing is, thanks to our state Focus on Energy program, they have free energy packs that are just everybody in Wisconsin who's almost every utility customer in the state can get one of these free energy-saving packs every single year. So you could get one now. They actually have one that's called Focus on Prepping for Sweater Weather, which is where we are right now after the big chill that's just come in. So that's kind of a focus on comfort. It's got insulation materials. It's got weather stripping, different things. And then even if you get that pack now, after January 1, you could get either a different focus pack, either for your energy-saving devices for your bathroom or your showers. So all Wisconsin residents are paying in to support this program that provides rebates to help us save on energy. And so this is a no-cost thing that they provide. They provide discounts also on energy-efficient appliances and furnaces. But this is a free thing that we just want everybody to know about and take advantage of.
Let's go back to our callers. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. This past summer, we decided to do something about, we live in an old farmhouse, and the thing takes a lot of propane to heat up, keep warm in the winter, and we decided to do something about it. So we put in about 2 more feet of insulation in the attic and had everything sealed. But we also replaced our furnace with a heat pump. And we picked this particular model of heat pump because we were told that it would qualify for a rebate from a Wisconsin program. So once the heat pump was installed and we got the paperwork from the contractor, we submitted it to the agency, and they rejected it. They said that the heat pump did not qualify for the program. So we're just kind of wondering is there any way to appeal this, or are there other avenues that we could look into?
Mike, thanks for the call. There are various kind of products like those heat pumps that Mike mentioned that might qualify for a rebate. Tom, in a situation where somebody went in thinking they're going to get a rebate, is there a recourse if it's rejected the first time around?
I don't know of one, but I would certainly try that. There are also tax credits that are available right now, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, for upgrades to your home, including getting an energy assessment, as well as there are going to be heat rebates on heat pumps. That are going to be now are available probably starting next year through the Inflation Reduction Act. Our state Public Service Commission still has to finalize the rules on that. I'm really sorry to hear that didn't exist, because I know you're doing the right thing to save money for your home and improve the comfort. Heat pump technology has come a long way and is working much better in cold climates. There were heat pumps have been popular around the country and are now we're now starting to see them getting deployed in the northern climates too. I would reach out to the customer service team at Focus and give it another shot, but I can't make guarantees on that.
Mike, good luck as you work through that. We'll go to Samara in northwestern Wisconsin. Samara, hi.
Afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. What did you want to tell us about?
Sure. I'm the program manager at Wisconsin's K-12 Energy Education Program, which is one of the programs of the Wisconsin Center of Environmental Ed. And I was just calling in to remind listeners that our students, our K-12 students who are at home with us, can be really great advocates and allies for energy efficiency and conservation in our homes, because we know that they're learning about this at school through the professional development that we provide to their teachers, as well as the lessons that teachers can get from us and the free lending kits that we have. And educators and families can learn more about it at keepprogram.org.
Thanks a lot for that call. Tom, can you talk about getting the word out about our energy efficiency options?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's a great program. There are so many good programs out there, and just like Focus is out there, and I encourage people to go to the Focus on website. They should actually have a list of all the incentives that are available. But that's a really great educational initiative, and it's just so important, because the kids can teach us a lot, can't they? And I think that's really critical. I know when I was back at the Journal Sentinel, we did a story about if everybody everybody went around their house and made sure they turned off the lights when they leave the room, and they, you know, replaced their light bulbs with LEDs, with their most frequently used lights in the house with LEDs, the whole state would see significant savings on their energy bills, and we'd have to build fewer power plants as a result and reduce our carbon footprint all at the same time.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Tom Content from the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin, looking at the currently existing heating season here in Wisconsin, and some energy-saving alternatives. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Tom, something I saw, this made me feel pretty good. Now, I've for years been, pulling curtains up and down, right? Let the sun in when it's cold, block the sun out, you know, when I have the air conditioner on, vice versa to keep the heat in at night. And I thought, you know, is this really making a difference? Yes, apparently, according to the advice on your website.
Oh, that's right. We put that out on our blog, and that's something, you know, we do at our house. The sun is a powerful, it's a powerful force, right? And even on a cold day, that sunlight can really bring in some radiance and some warmth, and it helps your mindset at the same time on those cold winter days. But that's a really good one. Another thing, there are actually energy saving thermal insulation curtains as well for people who want to spend a little more. And we have a lot of tips and resources like that on our website, and on our YouTube channel, we're going to have a replay available in the next day or so for the an energy savings webinar that we just hosted yesterday.
Now, we've been looking at some of the smaller stuff. How about if we're in the market for appliances? What kind of things can we do to make sure we get the most energy efficient one that meets our needs?
So the focus on energy and Energy Star is a label that everybody should be looking for, but the Focus on Energy website will actually have detailed information about what's available for you. In addition, there are smart thermostats are available, and there are discounts available on those smart thermostats on the Focus on Energy Marketplace website. So that's another thing to think about. And then the other thing, I mean, because these tax credits are available and more savings opportunities are coming through the Inflation Reduction Act, what we're recommending to people is that they should get an energy assessment, an energy audit. So a person comes in, an expert comes in with, they do either an infrared camera or a blower door test, and they really find out where your house is leaking the most energy. And there's a tax credit available for that. And once you get that, you can kind of plan out a roadmap for the projects that you can take over the next year to 3 years to bring down your energy footprint. because and there will be savings opportunities coming with new rebate programs that will be administered by Focus to help you afford some of these projects.
Yeah, can you talk about insulation? Now, say we've had that audit, we see where the heat is leaking out. What kind of things can we do, and what kind of help is available out there in terms of rebates?
Adding insulation is such an important thing. I mean, you think about people, Green Homeowners United, which is a focus on energy trade ally, the way they just like to describe it is if some when we walk out into the cold, we sometimes feel coldest on our feet and on our heads, right? Well, the house can be the same way. The attic and the basement are so important for shoring up your insulation. And that energy assessment will usually find problems in the attic and the basement. And that's the place to target for both insulation and air sealing. And Focus actually has discounts on whether you want to. They have a DIY program for those who want to do the stuff themselves, but then they also have a list of energy assessors and certified installers of insulation on their website.
Tom, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much.
That's Tom Content, Executive Director of the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin. We talked to him about this winter's utility forecast, what our heating bills might look like, and ways we could save money on our energy bills over the course of the season. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, two conservative legal scholars wrote a widely read argument that former President Trump shouldn't be on ballots because of a provision in the 14th Amendment. That's getting tested in courts right now in a few states, including a couple of Wisconsin's neighbors. We'll check out the argument. You can join in with your thoughts on the idea and your questions. Plus, it's this week's edition of Food Friday, featuring recipes and ingredients inspired by Latin American cuisine. That covers a lot of ground. You could join in with your favorites right now. Email ideas@WPR.org. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, participation in high school football in Wisconsin has been on the decline for some years now. We'll look at some of the reasons behind that and the impact it's having on kids, schools, and communities. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network. The Wisconsin High School football playoffs will hold their Level 3 round tomorrow night with 8 teams left at each division level of play across the state. But not every team in Wisconsin was able to finish even their regular season this year because of a shortage of players. For example, Bigfoot High School in Walworth and Waukesha South High School were among those that had to cancel games because of injuries. East Troy High School forfeited their entire varsity season because they didn't have enough players to field a team. That continues a trend of decreasing high school football participation in our state. Data from the National Federation of State High School Associations found that from 2009 to 2019, Wisconsin had the biggest decline of any state in the country. We're exploring what might be contributing to this trend, what impacts it could have on kids and sports, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this in your district, on your team, or your kids' team? Why do you think fewer kids are playing high school football here in Wisconsin? Would you like to see more participation in the sport? Or do you think the decline in football isn't maybe such a bad thing? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Travis Wilson is the general manager of the Wisconsin Sports Network and the football editor of wissports.net, covering high school sports around Wisconsin. Travis, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Happy to be on to talk high school sports, and always good to talk about high school football.
Now, we've mentioned a few different schools canceling games, maybe even their whole season. Are you seeing a fair amount of teams around the state either hitting that point or maybe right on the edge of having enough players to compete?
It has been something that has continued for a number of years, actually. There's unfortunately always a couple schools that usually know they're going to have challenges at the start of the year with participation numbers. And at some point during the season, because of injuries, because of ineligibility, whatever it might be, have to hit pause and cancel a game. Sometimes they have to cancel the end of their season. Not something that, that you like to see, obviously, but you know, it is relatively rare, maybe one or two schools per year. There are some schools that cancel before the season starts, or maybe we'll move from 11-player football to 8-player football. But, you know, teams are trying the best they can, and sometimes it just it gets to the point where you can't field a competitive team. And depending on the school, you know, they might have enough players out for football. For instance, in the instance of Waukesha South, a large school, you know, a good-sized school with over 1,000 enrollment, they had enough players to have a team, but you know, a lot of them were underclassmen. They did not have a lot of seniors out for football this year, and they play in the best conference in the state, in the Classic 8 Conference, and throwing a bunch of freshmen and sophomores out there against, you know, high-level juniors and seniors was not going to be a good situation for them. So they did cancel a game earlier this year, but again, not something you like to see, but it is relatively uncommon.
Now, you mentioned not wanting to put those underclassmen in the game. If you've got a track and field team, okay, you don't have enough seniors. Well, you know, those freshman runners might lose by a lot, but that's okay. A contact sport, especially one like football, are you hearing from athletic directors, yeah, we don't want to put those kids in if they're not physically ready because they might be more at risk of injury in those cases?
That's absolutely the case. Football is a contact sport, like hockey, like wrestling, where it really is tough to have younger kids go out there as 14, 15-year-olds competing against 17 and 18-year-olds sometimes. So, you don't want to have that situation. Sometimes you have to. Sometimes there's players that are ready for that. But it is, you know, not the norm that you have a bunch of freshmen out there. And again, based on the size of the school, especially challenging. At smaller schools where it might be a Division VII school, you know, it is fairly common to have freshmen and sophomores play. It just depends on if they're ready.
Now, with the trend like this, I might wonder, is this COVID, except those numbers I referenced went through 2019, showing that that 10-year decline. That was before COVID. I might think, oh, it must be a nationwide trend, but the same numbers show at least some states like Texas are having more participation in football. I assume a question a lot of people in the sport, in the state are asking, Travis, is why? What's going on? Why are we seeing a steady, what looks like a steady decline in football participation in Wisconsin high schools?
Well, I think a few important points to note. First of all, the numbers that were referenced in the article that you refer to are 11-player football numbers specifically. And Wisconsin is one of 27 states that offers a reduced football player option. In Wisconsin, that is an 8-player option that really didn't become popular or really didn't become a resurgence until about 2013, when a group of about 16 schools started playing reduced player football, 8-player. And now we're up to about 60 schools playing 8-player football. In this year, for the most recent year, which would have been the 2022-23 season, there were over 1,100 students participating in 8-player football that are not included in the 11-player numbers that you reference. We've also seen declines in overall enrollment throughout the state of Wisconsin. That's something that, you know, I've seen a number of articles and a number of concerns over declining birth rates, lower enrollment numbers in schools in general. So when there's lower numbers in school, it is going to lower the number of participants. And if you look at total high school participation in Wisconsin, not just football, that number has decreased since 2009 as well. So there have been some decreases in football. I think if you look at overall participation rate in football between 11-player and 8-player, it's not quite as bad as maybe the article makes it out to be. And again, Wisconsin is losing young people, you know, having smaller enrollments in schools, whereas other states may be growing. So that does lend itself as well. But in terms of why there may be lower participation numbers in football, there certainly was, you know, a sharp decline in the mid-2010s, and that kind of coincided with, you know, a large amount of press, a large amount of discussions around concussions at that time in the NFL, in college, and of course in high school and youth football. And that scared away, you know, some participants, some parents that decided it wasn't the best opportunity for them. There have been some great rules, accommodations, and rules changes that have been made over the last decade or several decades to address and improve safety at the high school football level. You know, many of the people in the high school football realm, you'll say this is the safest the sport has ever been, with all the rules, with all the equipment, with all the limitations on contact. But, you know, we are seeing some resurgence in participation numbers as well, despite declining enrollments in recent seasons. We did see big drops during COVID. That had a huge impact on all sports, but especially football. But we're starting to see some nice improvements and nice increases in high school football and youth football over the last couple of years.
Talking to Travis Wilson with Wisconsin Sports Network and wissports.net, looking at the present and future of high school football in Wisconsin. Some teams having trouble fielding full teams, others switching, as he mentioned, and we'll get into this more, to eight-person teams. You could join in at, with your experiences, your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Denny is with us in Ogdensburg. Denny, hi.
All right, thanks for taking my call. My grandson played high school football in Wisconsin, left tackle, played 4 years on a full college ride, was very good. He could have gone a fifth year, paid for it to get a master's degree, and he said, I've had enough. It's a little bit of a concussion issue for us as parents. He's a four-point student, but he chose his path. But there are a lot of other injuries when you start playing at that level. You're injured almost all the time. It worked out well for him, but that was his decision to make. And we were concerned about concussions in the mid-teens also.
Denny, thanks a lot for the call. Denny's sharing an experience. Well, congratulations on getting that full ride to college. Not everybody, every player is going to get that. But Travis, it sounds like a family weighing that decision of concussion, going with yes, play football and all the way through college.
Yeah, and obviously that's a decision for parents to make. Not only in high school, not only at college, but also in youth football or youth sports in general. You know, there's risks involved in participating in sports. I'm a youth football coach myself, have coached youth football for 9 years, and, you know, it happens. There's injuries that happen just like there are in any sport. You know, we have great trainers that we work with in our community that that help. We have practice guidelines in place. We have rules within the leagues that we play to try to minimize and limit possible injuries. But ultimately, it is a contact sport that it is up to each family and each parent to decide if that's something that they would like to pursue.
Thanks for sharing that story, Denny. We're talking to Travis Wilson from wissports.net about a decline in high school football participation in Wisconsin, but maybe some signs of a resurgence. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What does high school football mean to you and your community? Is it still the marquee sport at the local high school? Did you play or watch in high school? Are you on a team right now? Maybe getting ready for a playoff game, or is your kid? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Travis Wilson, general manager of the Wisconsin Sports Network, football editor of wissports.net, which covers high school sports around Wisconsin. We are talking about high school football, some declines in participation over the years, some bounce back maybe post-COVID, some schools struggling to field teams or switching to eight-player teams. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's focus in on eight-player football. Now, we're ahead of the curve a little bit. About 5 years ago, I talked to Paul Micklig, head coach and co-athletic director at Newman Catholic High School in Wausau, still there, I believe, about why his school made the change. Here's a listen.
When it comes down to it, that there's two factors, and the first one was player safety. With the numbers in our school going down to we're at an enrollment of 119, and we have a couple sports in the fall that we offer. You know, we were the last year, 2 years ago, when we were an 11-man, we had, you know, 19 kids that we had playing in our last game that didn't have a JV, so you couldn't develop the younger kids, and it just wasn't, you know, we were taking some hits and hards, and guys were getting hurt all over the place. So we were trying to make sure that safety was our number one priority, and how can we get these guys safe.
We got a caller, I think, with experience with the eight players on a side football. Andy is with us in Central Wisconsin. Andy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, you know, I had a son that's played eight-man football now for a couple years in a smaller school, and you know, you talked about how it's enrollment versus participation. You know, you got some schools here that are coming into eight-man that have the same enrollment possibly, but you're talking higher participation. You know, you got schools showing up with 12, 13 kids for the whole team playing both sides of the ball, and you want to talk about safety. And then you go to these schools that have way higher participation. These kids are getting killed. I mean, you got 45 kids standing on the sideline that are 6'2" and 300 pounds, and by halftime it's 40-0, and the smaller school with the lower participation has got more kids, I believe, coming off with concussions and stuff like that. I just don't know if eight-man, you know, for them schools, if you want to go by enrollment, that I get that. But, you know, when you could play three more kids easily, it just makes it, you know, if it's a safety thing, I don't think it really is, because I think some of these kids or schools that are having lower participation are getting hurt. And gotcha. I think them schools that have higher participation should be playing 11-man football and not just dominating in the 8-man, where you have schools that are coming in that they just want to play football.
I gotcha. Andy, thanks a lot for the call. Travis, a couple perspectives you heard on 8-man football. What are you seeing out there?
Well, we've certainly seen an increase in the number of schools that are offering 8-player football that are seeing that as an opportunity to continue to have a football program that may be a better option for them, as opposed to co-opting with another school and continuing to play 11-player football. It really is and was designed for the smallest schools. In fact, the WIAA has a cap, and the WIAA is the governing body for high school sports in Wisconsin. They have an enrollment cap of 200 students in the high school for a team to be eligible for the 8-player playoffs. Again, trying to keep it for the smallest of the small schools under that 200 enrollment level. There are some schools that participate in 8-player football with enrollments above 200, generally not very far above, but they are not eligible for the playoffs. And it has been a real great opportunity for schools to continue to offer high school football at the 8-player level. And, you know, a little history on that, back in the 40s, 50s, and even into the 60s, there was a high number of 8-player teams around the state. And then when school consolidation happened during that time, schools got larger, and they kind of phased out the reduced player option until it was brought back in about 2013. So it really has been a great way for schools to continue to offer football. Again, it is designed for the smallest schools, and we are seeing generally those smaller schools that are gravitating towards 8-player to be able to continue to offer football.
Thanks for the call, Andy, at 800-642-1234. We'll go to John now in Darlington. John, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Question for your expert there. What role is soccer having on football numbers? Is the emergence of the popularity of soccer maybe drawing numbers away from some smaller and medium-sized football programs?
Interesting question, John. Is the other football drawing away from American football, Travis, do you think?
I think it certainly is in some communities. You know, when you have a small school, a rural school with maybe 300 or 400 students, you don't have a lot of boys that will play sports or can play sports. And so if you have multiple sport opportunities, it does become a challenge. And, you know, some of the schools that we mentioned that had to drop their football programs this year, Bigfoot being one of them, East Troy, you know, those are kind of smaller, mid-sized type schools that do offer soccer as an option. And I think that has cut into some of the numbers that they have in football. If you're a school that offers soccer under, you know, 300 or so, you're really starting to spread those athletes thin, and it can be a challenge to field competitive teams where you're talking about too high, you know, number of participants that you need for those sports. You have 11 on the field at a time in both football and soccer, and it's just a challenge to have that many. I think of a school like Wisconsin Heights, located in just outside of Madison, a school that is traditionally about 250 or under 250 enrollment that offers football and does offer soccer. And that's one of the schools that has dropped to 8-player football with a little bit larger enrollment because they were having a challenge in 11-player football, I think in part because it's just hard to have that many programs going at the same time.
Thanks for the call, John. We're talking to Travis Wilson with the Wisconsin Sports Network and wissports.net, looking at the future of high school football. Some schools switching to 8-player teams, some occasionally having to cancel games or even seasons because of a shortage of players. Back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Sheboygan. Mike, hi.
Hi. I've noticed that the seasons seem to be longer. Our football season started sometime in mid-August, and now they're starting in early August. And I think there's a little bit of burnout when you start a football season so early, and maybe part of it is burnout.
Mike, thanks for the call. Have high school football seasons gotten longer over the years, Travis?
The number of games has not changed. The season has stretched a little bit. Going back about 10 years or so, prior to that point, the Wisconsin football playoffs and the end of the regular season were condensed to a point where the last game of the regular season and the first two games of the playoffs took place in a span of about 10 or 11 days. And teams were playing three games in 10 days. And that was determined to not be a safe situation for those student athletes to have that much contact in such a short amount of time. So to alleviate that, they did push back up the start of practices in the fall. So now they start in the first week in August, as opposed to it used to be, sometime around August 10th, 11th, something like that. So it was done for safety, but it did kind of move up that start date a little bit. And that has been a continued point of discussion, maybe a little bit of a challenge for some people. But again, I think with safety in mind, it was certainly the right decision at that time.
Thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hello.
Hi. I just wonder, as far as there being a shortage because of injuries, how many of those injuries are because of contact injuries, or maybe it's because the players just aren't all that familiar with the move, so maybe they end up with aches or pains or strains that maybe a physical therapist or a chiropractor could deal with, so it wouldn't aggravate things. And if there aren't enough people for the offensive line, then the defensive players can say one Mississippi, two Mississippi.
Dennis, thanks for the call. First of all, those non-contact injuries, a factor in pretty much any sport. Travis, what goes into trying to prevent those?
Well, one of the great things that has happened over the last few years is more and more schools are employing athletic trainers either at a full-time rate, maybe by contracting with a local hospital or healthcare provider, or at least having them available more frequently. When I was in high school back in the mid and late 90s, we didn't really know what an athletic trainer was, to be honest with you. It was the doctor that you went to if you had a problem the next day. And now at many high schools, there is at least one, if not two, athletic trainers at every game, certainly, and at most or all practices as well. And they've been able to work with student athletes and keep them healthy, provide them with rehabilitation opportunities, identify injuries, identify, the difference between being hurt and being injured. If it's just a bump or a bruise that you can continue to play through, or if it's something that does require, additional treatment, either with the trainer or with your healthcare provider. That's been a big, big plus over the number of years as more and more schools embrace the athletic trainers and what they're able to do working with not only football programs, but all athletic programs at schools.
Dennis, thanks for that call. And just our last less than a minute, Travis, are you hopeful that we can get more kids involved in school sports, football, and all the rest?
Well, I am a huge advocate for education-based athletics, and I love high school sports. Obviously, it's my job and
I
do and what I love. Yes, and we are seeing positive trends. Nationwide, 11-player football participation increased last year for the first time. It was the first year-over-year increase since 2013. Again, that's nationwide. Overall football participation, boys and girls, 11-player and reduced, was up 6% last year from the previous year. So we're seeing good trends. We're seeing good things happen. High school football is a great experience, and I certainly encourage everyone to consider it and make it a worthwhile opportunity.
Travis, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
That's Travis Wilson, general manager of the Wisconsin Sports Network and football editor of wissports.net. He was with us today to look at why Wisconsin high school football participation decreased over a 10-year period and signs, at least at the national level, of a bounce back. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.